Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Good evening and welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. I am so glad that all of you hung out with us this week after the last glitch and technical issues once again with Blog Talk service being quote unquote down. And we are going to get into our normal regular shout outs. I got to thank a couple of special people today. And that's going to be, first, we got to shout out to God for being here, because definitely have to make sure we give him his praise, because we know what this world is going through right now. So being here is a blessing. Definitely want to thank my co-host. She can't be on tonight, but Miss Asia H., thank you so much for that. I want to thank Christina Vera, Nathan Huckabee, because he was a new listener that got us this special and amazing man that was going to be on our panel this evening. I want to thank all of you that are out there promoting this. Thanks to my family. Thanks to Untitled, my two sons, my music clients that are out there making music contributions and also audio video contributions to the show. So Jared and Cameron, thank you for your contributions and your amazing commitment to what you're doing. To all of my On the Edge show lounge listeners, thank you. Thank you to my listeners that have been hanging out on the live stream. You guys have been active. I appreciate it. As a matter of fact, I have you guys buzzing up over there letting me know you want to hear Untitled's birthday song to their mother, me, again. So I'm going to play that as our pre-topic song. Now tonight, guys, we have a special guest, an amazing man. Those of you that have been following the link, that has been reading his book, that have all been letting me know how much his story has affected us. He's here tonight to share his story and the amazing journey he's been on to try to abdicate and get rid of something all of us mothers are afraid of and hate, and that's bullying. We know for a fact that too many times certain things involved stop bullying from being approached, addressed, eradicated, and dealt with. And the people who commit the bullying offenses, usually for whatever reason, one way or the other, depending on who was the offender, things take a whole nother turn in order to protect that offender. So tonight we're going to be interviewing Mr. Bobby Bean. He is the author of Shattered Dreams, Broken Patriot. The book, if I don't know how anyone can read it and not feel broken and a mess. I couldn't get through three chapters without crying four or five times and being angry, going back, trying to stretch through another three. And I still haven't completed reading it, because just reading what he's gone through up to the point that I'm reading it was crazy. So let's do this, guys. His name is Bobby Bean. I thank you. I want to shout him out because he'll be coming in any minute. We have to go out with our pre-broadcast song, a word from our sponsors. And when we get back tonight, this is going to be the first of three visits that he makes. And that's going to be on the topic anti-bullying battle, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And believe me, you're going to hear a bit of all of that. So with that being said, everybody, we're going to go under with Hold Our Hand by Untitled, which is their beautiful tribute to me, their mom, and to moms everywhere. After that, a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back to get Mr. Bean here on the radio. So don't go away. We will be right back.
always gave us love at our worst points. Yeah, you always gave us everything we asked for. When there was nothing there, nothing to hope for. No one can compare. You were always there to hold our hand, hold our hand. You were always there to hold our hand, hold our hand, hold our hand. You were always there to hold our hand. Whoa.
Always taught us to fight our demons, always taught us to stand strong, always taught us to keep believing, always taught us to keep pushing on. You never let us fall down, you guided us through all darkness. Before we knew how to count, you always made sure we were breathing. You gave us a miracle, and that miracle is life. Yeah, we're forever grateful, no words can ever describe how much we love you and adore you. So many beautiful things through all of the awful, you stay hopeful, and that's all
yeah,
that we see.
Yeah, you always give us love at our worst points. Yeah, you always gave us everything we asked for. When there was nothing there, nothing to hope for. No one can compare. You were always there to hold our hand, hold our hand. You were always there to hold our hand, hold our hand, hold our hand. You were always there to hold our hand. Yeah, you always gave us love at our worst points. Yeah, you always gave us everything we asked for. When there was nothing there, nothing to hope for. No one can compare. You were always there to hold our hand, hold our hand. You were always there to hold our hand, hold our hand, hold our hand. You were always there to hold our hand. Whoa.
Going through a lot, but you never let anything stop you. Even when you're dealing with the worst, you always let faith guide you. You never let pain defy you, no matter how big or small. I've seen you get through it all. You're an angel in disguise, always there when I need you the most. Yeah, chest pumped, head high, natural confidence, no need to boast. Single-handedly doing it all, no one compares, cause you were the GOAT. Devil trying to ruin your pride, you don't even worry, he's doing the most. You're a child of God, you give out your hand, you know that he'll keep you afloat. And I know that he'll keep you afloat, Ma, because we all know you're a great person. So this is our happy birthday to you. You know, we've been through a lot. You've been through a lot. We love
you. Yeah, you always gave us love at our worst point. Yeah, you always gave us everything we asked for. When there was nothing there, nothing to hold for. No one can compare. You were always there to hold our hand, hold our hand. You were always there.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On The Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On The Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On The Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On The Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett, and without further ado, we're going to bring in tonight's guest, Mr. Bobby Bean. Just give me just a second, and we will bring him in. Hi, Mr. Bean. Are you there, Bobby?
Yes, ma'am. Let me say happy birthday
to you. Okay.
Oh, God. Thank you so much. It's a little past my birthday, but that was something that my sons wrote. As you know, well, I spoke with you last month. We were in a car accident. It was like right before my birthday. So they wrote that, and it's been a highly requested song. So my boy's happy. I'm happy. And it was beautiful for me. I am so honored right now, sir, to have you on my panel. For more than just what your story is and for more than your book or anything, but because your battle, you never should have had to go through it. But the fact that even through everything that was thrown at you, all the things that bullying alone does to people, the PTSD, the horror of the act itself, whatever damages physically or otherwise that you have to recover from, here you are standing here still trying to put your voice out there to make sure that, you know, other people's children are protected by laws that you have been trying to put in place with yet another of your known children out in your area that was bullied actually to death at the same time. So before I have you tell your story, let me just give a little bit of your history. Those of you that have been following the promotions for this amazing gentleman all week know that I have sent you to his link for his book called Shattered Dreams, Broken Patriot, where his story is in full. Some things won't be able to be discussed tonight, but the details are in that book and you can see for yourself. So, Bobby, let's speak, because you and I both hate bullying. We both believe that, you know, bullying is under-addressed. And even though there are laws in place, thanks to your efforts and that of Debbie Johnston, it's still a very widespread epidemic here. And our children are really getting caught out there. And one of the things that I have brought up in previous segments is that for some reason, whenever that offender has some sort of capitalistic gain or benefit to the people around it, that even certain laws go passed over for that person. They get to circumvent it because they're standing to the capitalistic contribution, which is sports in a lot of ways, or entertainment is another. And it just so happened that the person involved with this story for you happened to have one of those statuses for your area. So please welcome to the stage, everyone, Bobby Bean from Florida, and go ahead and tell your story, sir.
Again, thank you for having me on the show. And
absolutely.
This took place in Sebring, Florida, small southern town. I moved up here, people, from Broward, Davie, Florida, where I was raised at, Cooper City area, and thinking I would, by moving to a rural community, I could be a little more wholesome for the children and safer. I never knew about the small town politics of a southern town. Well, that being said, this is what happened. Been a long time and it still hurts. We started the day like any other day, getting the children ready to get on the bus. I live down about a mile of a dirt road up by the bus stop. Got them up there. Just almost missed the bus, people. You'll understand more later. Almost missed the bus. Came back. About an hour and a half later, the phone rings. Carol picks it up, and they say, Matthew got in on a fight in the locker room, and he's in the clinic. We said, okay. And about 10 minutes later, the phone rings again. And they said he looked real bad. So I told Carol, I'm running a printing press at a one-man print shop. I took the youngest one. She took the number three boy. And they're small, three-year-old and down. I took the infant if I could watch them while I'm running the press. She runs into town. And when she runs into town and she walks into the clinic, Matthew's in the corner in the cot. And all he's saying is, I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go home. Okay, I'm not in at this time. I'm still running the printing press at home. So the two teachers carry him out to the car. They put him in the car. At that time, I didn't know it, but legally, he's your hot potato. Okay, they just passed him off to me. She drives back out to the ranch past the hospital. When she comes up to my plate glass window, we got a very large plate glass window in the house. She pulls up. I could see out the window that Matthew was in convulsions. His eyes are rolled back.
Oh,
he's,
God.
You know, vomiting out the side. I run out. My wife's a small woman. I snatched her out of the car. The number three, I'm off to the hospital, okay? I could see instantly I was in trouble because I was around paramedics, and I knew to roll my knuckles in his sternum to try to get him conscious. And I'm taken out to the hospital, and I'm doing this as I'm driving quite quickly. I get to the hospital, pull in, I grab him out of the car seat, and as I'm carrying him, Matthew melts like wet macaroni in my arms, just melts. I'm running with him in my arms. The first doors open up, the sliding glass doors, zoom, they open up. The next doors, I kick in, okay? I kick him in. The nurse comes out with a pen source light, puts it in his eyes, and looks at me real quick and says, he's been like this for hours. I'm looking at her all panicking, saying, I only know 10 minutes. That's all I know is 10 minutes. So we put him in bed A. And now they're working on him. They're working on him. You know, then it came up, is he on drugs? Is he not? I said, I'd like to think he's not, but I don't know 100%. So they test him. There was no drugs. Now they're working on him, working on him. I'm holding him. He does it again. He just melts. Okay. Now they're jumping all over him, okay? During this thing, what gave me my biggest drive, I held Matthew in my arms for 22 minutes, and I had to contemplate I was going to have to tell Carol we just lost our son, okay? I'm just sweating, and you can see everybody else is uptight. So they're going back and forth. They do a scan. He said, I'm Highlands County, Sebring, Florida. Does not have a good head trauma unit. They said he's just at the edge of where the blood's starting to, you know, leak into his brain. So we go ahead and, you know, they airlift him. And they took him over to Tampa, Davis Island. When they got him over there, they put him on life support. Now, I don't know that because, see, I'm already coming home, and all I'm telling is, Carol, we're in it. You know, had some choice words. We're in trouble. I said, you take Greg, get to Tampa. I'm taking the two babies and staying home because they were infants almost. So she goes there. When she gets there, he was on life support for about 7-8 hours.
Oh, God.
When they got him off the life support, when he stabilized, Carol called me and says, we know he's going to live. And I said, okay, that's all. At that point, we know he's going to live. All we knew at that time really was nothing. Okay. At all. It went down that fast. Well, about on the fourth day, Carol's coming back from Tampa. They release him. Eye damage. They said he got hit between 30 to 40 times in the head, where his brain bounced around like a basketball. And that's what really caused a lot. Now, at this time, I'm talking to the teachers and the staff, because they're calling in that. And all we know that there was a fight in the locker room. That's all I know I heard about. Well, on the way back from Tampa, Matthew sees a yellow bus. He just goes ape shit in the car. We don't know anything at this time. All we know is what I'm telling you. So she gets him home where they gave us medicine to calm him down. And me and Carol are sitting at the table after we got him tucked away and the family's totally stressed. I told her, I said, boy, that kid hit him awful hard in the locker room, to cause us much damage. And Greg speaks up and says, Dad, it didn't start in the locker room. It started on the bus. I said, what do you mean on the bus? So he tells me how it went down on the bus, what he knew. Well, next morning I go down to the school and I'm pissed and I already want to press one, assault and battery charge on them, what they were doing. Now I want to press number two. And they're trying to talk me out of it, but I'm hot. And so I came back home. Now this is where it gets a little weird. It was about on the eighth day. I could see something was really wrong with Matthew. So did Carol. Something was really wrong. There's something not right here. He was mentally, at the time we didn't know what it was the starting of the post-traumatic stress disorder. It came out in depositions. My son was beat for 2 hours and 47 minutes. You'll learn a little more here in a minute. And so Greg told me what went down. We found out that he got beat on the bus, beat in the locker room, and the same kid who did the beating, he was getting beat so bad in the locker room, the witnesses said that Matthew looks like he was going into a coma. And we found out the perpetrator, after beating him on the bus and beating him in the locker room, walked in the distance of a football field, beating them down this little alleyway that goes around the school at Sebring Middle School. What caused the most damage? Okay. The book could go into more detail in it. It still hurts after all this time, but a great deal. There's no family left at the end of it, people. We did suicide watch for 6 years. On and off, it broke Carol. It broke recently. Carol passed, people, on July 5th. A lot of the people, a lot of it was from a broken heart. The book, I'll say we got divorced. We never did get divorced. But the family never did survive. Dang, it's been so long, Katie.
I know.
The boy... would ruin the long-term beating bothered it. But what I kind of drift here. I'm sorry, people. It hurts. It's been a long time. If you've seen how it destroyed a family and the community attacked the family. We've been ostracized for some time down here in Sebring. The beating he took altered my son forever. The post-traumatic stress disorder, I like to go to this little comment, what happened. We were doing that suicide watch, and we couldn't handle it anymore, we felt, so we took him up to Gainesville, where they have a psychiatric area. And we were trying to do this all ourselves, the school board and the sheriff's organization, they all turned their back. Heard promises, but no delivery. And if you read the book, you understand more. everybody in the book, the only names that are changed is my family and the perpetrator. Everybody else is real. But we're up in Gainesville, and I went into the second floor in the bottom looking for some help for the whole family and Matthew. And the lady took me in, and when I told her the story in greater detail, when she started typing, she's kind of just typing away, this is a father, you know, little fight. And when I went and told her more detail about the second one, she slowed down, but she kept typing. But when she got to the third one about the walk on the clinic beating them, she quit typing. She looked at me and told me I would never get out. I never did get out. The family was destroyed. They seen something I didn't. Families mostly don't survive on these episodes. When I did tell the, this is one of the most heartbreaking parts of this book to me as my family. We're about on the eighth day. Go back to the story. I'm walking down this hallway we got, and I see Carol holding Matthew in the corner, just shaking, 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 shaking. Like it was winter and he's wet outside. And she's in the corner consoling him. I walked by and I looked at her. She caught her eyes. She says, Clem walked into the clinic. I said, what? What? Because at that time, all I knew was about the fight on the bus and the fight in the locker room. Okay. That's all I knew. We're 8 days down in this thing. So Carol says, go around back. So I go around back, because that's always what we talked in private outside the corner of the house. And she tells me Clem walked into the clinic beating him.
Oh, God.
And beat, you know. And Clem outweighed my son by about 65 pounds. Okay? And he ended up being a wrestler at the school. At that time, I'm shocked. It's late at night. There's nobody at the school or nothing. And Matthew walks out the door. And the way he was falling apart and shivering and crying, he melted that night. At that time, I didn't realize the whole family melted. And I was trying to hold it together. It didn't work out too good. And next day, I go down and I'm hopping mad. Stu Gumphrey in the book, who's a principal in this area, called me and told me he just found out too. Well, you go into the book too, about the 14th day, I wouldn't return Matthew back to the school. And they hit me and the wife underneath the Florida truancy laws, and we were threatened to be put in jail if we did not return Matthew back to Sebring Middle School. And they were talking about locking me up. This is 14 days after people. They retaliated. They hit my business. I wish I would give a better story here at this time, Katie. It's been so long. It's I haven't talked about this in a long time, people, and this is going to be my last little series here. But my book's always for free, or you can buy it on Amazon or Kindle. The way it broke down a family from a community attacking us is a very interesting read. The book's been in 13 countries. I knew last, and one of the better reviews I ever had was a gentleman in Russia, and it said Bobby Bean was more freer in Moscow, and Ireland than he was in the land of the free, America.
And you know, not to interrupt you, but absolutely, it's like, okay, so you got to bear with me, too, because I don't think anybody hearing this story could be unaffected. But Let me say this to you, Bobby. First of all, no apologies here about you breaking down, because first of all, let alone, okay, just put aside for 1 minute the absolute inhumane brutality and the brutalistic nature of what took place. But a parent thinking about their kid being bullied anyway is already something that's traumatizing to a parent. So you have no need whatsoever to feel like you have to be any special way because it's a radio interview or whatever. You are a parent first and foremost.
Yeah, it's been, the book is more detailed.
And I get it. You probably have done this a million and 17 times, and it can be, like I said, I'm honored that you chose to close out your interviewing days with me for the next two segments. But I'm going to say this to the, let me help fill you in, fill in the viewers. The boy, okay, I just want to be clear with you, Bobby. Clem is a assumed name for the actual name of the person, right?
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Just
so
his name
and
my
openly.
Children's name. Mine's okay. Is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, listeners, Clem was a middle school sports champion of different sports types in that middle school in that county. And one of the things that he did was wrestling. That was the bigger thing. Now, I believe that based on some of the things that was said in the book, that there was speculation that he may have been dabbling with steroids as well, which everybody knows, especially in younger children, steroids have a tendency to enhance or exacerbate rage and strength. So that's definitely one. If he was already bigger than your son as it is, that the natural punch alone with enhanced strength from a chemically induced situation would have already put undue pressure on a child of average strength and build. So that's one. Two, he also, when I was reading, he had some martial arts training as well, correct?
Yeah, actually, that came out in the depositions later. He was trained in martial arts, boxing.
And I thought taekwondo?
It's been a while. He was training like three different things. His dad was a real aggressive person. I know. I've never met the man. I just only heard. He did come from he came from a lot of trouble. That I do know. And he was considered the number one bully in the area. Now, the sheriff's department had a program called the knockdown program where troubled kids would wrestle other kids. And believe it or not, the sheriff's department gave this kid an award underneath the knockdown program in Sebring. Longer
See,
story,
I don't
but...
even like that name because, like, there's an actual – it was on all along the social media trends and everything where they call it the knockout game. And that wasn't exactly very positive or productive to help kids, you know, constructively pull out their anger or you know, express their energy. This was killing people. You know, there were random people doing initiation crap because the social media, you know, popularity trend – crap is a mess, and your child wasn't even bullied at a time where social media was that prevalent. So,
no, the first blow was to the back of the cranium area. What I've learned is that'll start knocking out your eyesight and motor skills. And but it was a 22 minutes where really altered our family, asking for what went on that day. And words nowadays. No, go ahead.
No, darling. You.
No, I mean.
Your words.
I can tell you, I went
I
up. We were looking for answers. For the next 6-7 years, it just destroyed the family. I sold half my assets, spent it on doctors. Psychologically and physically, we went busted the small town attacked my business.
Went up the legislation and
met Debbie Johnson and a coalition of parents for a fight for the cause. So when you hear my story more in detail, it pretty well sold the show. It showed complete breakdown of law enforcement and the school system in here in my county. For a fight to go on for 2 hours and 47 minutes is the walk to the clinic. All psychologists and mental doctors said it was what broke my son. And the suicide watch, me and Carol just lived on coffee. And 24/7, it just ate us up and ate the family up. When a child has post-traumatic stress disorder attacks, they're just ugly. I didn't put them all in the book. Anybody's been around somebody with mental illness knows how ugly it can get. We tried various medicines. They backfired. Some were something you had to see. It gets real ugly, and they were life-threatening many times. And I thought the community would help more in legislation. I went to Champion of Children in our area, who's actually literally across the street from the middle school this happened. They wouldn't help my son the day of it. They wouldn't help me in legislation. The Advocacy Center in Sebring would not help me. I went to every church downtown in Sebring. There's 9 of them. My wife is a big follower of Jesus, so she asked me to do that. Nobody would help at the churches, okay? I didn't realize later on when you read the book about the book was if they would have gave me justice that day, there's people in the sheriff organization in Florida would have lost their jobs and their elected positions. And my son was politically sacrificed. Yeah, my son was politically sacrificed.
Florida
Department of Yeah.
I saw that. You know, Bobby, when you gave me the what I call the honor of coming here all week, and in a way we know about the sabotage. I call it sabotage. I don't care what anybody else tries to call it. Where we were ready to go, and then all of a sudden all these never before happened server blockages just came up. And you know, the good thing is that I know that maybe this is a little hard for you, but I have faith in higher things, and it's at this point everything sort of worked out. But here's something that I wanted to say to you. I thought really hard about the type of interview that I wanted to do, because I always have this really big pet peeve hatred, you know, with the stupidity of reporters and journalists that use stories like yours to just fill the time in of telling the story, and they act like it's from this humanity, you know, concern angle, but really it's just to get their Nobel Prize or whatever. And some of the things that they ask somebody in a position like this, I want to like jump through the screen sometimes and punch them. And I said, if I ever got the position to be an interviewer, I would never do that. And this is what I mean. I've seen your interviews, and you know, like everybody, of course the story is important, but I'm tired of seeing people say things like, well, how did you feel when that happened? How the hell do you think we're supposed to feel when that happens? That's not something that should be said. But what I did love and embrace in our pre-broadcast interview, Bobby, was that you said there's other aspects of bullying besides what people think of, the obvious, the beating, the shaming, you know. There's so much more involved with it that we have to stop this, because there's so much involved that destroys kids and families more than just somebody beating on your kid, okay? And listeners, bear with me because, you know, I'm listening to this man and I'm reading his story and it's not, there's things that just has to be more important than what you look like or what political office you're going to lose or what damn funding you're going to lose. Like, why can't anybody that's in the right positions do the right things? You said something that stuck with me in our pre-talks. And I want the listeners to understand this, because for any of you parents that are listening that know your kid is a problem child in those schools, and for those of you parents that are mothers and fathers of victims of this, you need to understand that this man on this show right now lost everything, given a damn about the rest of the world's kids, because pretty much what they did to his family and even what he's going through now, we as a community, we don't have the right to sit back there and let his fight go undone. Now, I'm going to say this. You said to me, you didn't understand about trying to understand where PTSD was coming from. Nobody understands that PTSD is just not a cute little acronym that comes from people thinking about soldiers from the war. This is something that destroys people because it's silent. No. It's in their mind, it's in their heart. It came from something that was physical but is no longer physical. It transcends into something that's untangible, but yet it's as real as anything. You lost your wife because your family couldn't stand under the pressure of something that both of you needed to be strong with each other for, but it was too much. This boy, this beautiful 14-year-old boy who had his whole life ahead of him, you're thinking you're starting a new life in a new town, and they did everything they could. And the thing is, the things that were written in this book that you went through all stem from the fact that they were trying to stop a scandal that would stop their star student from doing what they do, because everybody knows that sports organizations, these athletic organizations, entertainment industries, all of this stuff matters more than actually bringing some value on top of the game, on top of the music, on top of the awards. The value in it would make these industries so much better, because you can count on them to be big people with real power to do something about it. And they failed your family. And then instead of accepting that, or at least listen, do something quietly, you know, say something to you like, you know what, we're going to handle this, but unfortunately, I can't say this out loud, or please don't say anything out loud. But what they did, I'm going to say stuff from the book, because I know it's hard for you to say, so I can say this, because I can cry, but I didn't walk this, but I can see how this will be angry to everybody else. Listeners, they killed his children's pets and left them there for them to find.
Yeah.
They blocked his wife's. Oh, go ahead, Bobby, because this is your story, and I'm only going to fill in when you feel that it's a little sad for you.
No, it's that was an interest. We lost people. Carol was a vet tech for 15 years. She was actually accepted to Gainesville as a veterinarian. Not a veterinarian, but to get into school. We didn't have enough money to swing it, but so she knew a lot about animals' health. But in 9 months, the first 24 hours of speaking up against Highlands County School Board and the Sheriff's Organization underneath Susan Benton around here, we were attacked. Our business was. We lost like 9 animals. Some were shot in the head. Taurus, the bull, was called a doby calf. It's kind of like an elf. It'd never be no big, but we found him dead, and he was a pet. Tina ran, and Carol said Tina was poisoned. She knew more about it, but we did lose a lot of pets in a very short period of time. We lost so many. One night, when this goes down, when it's all going down in the first 24 months, and they're just all over us. Carol was shaking in the bed so bad that I thought the bed was a vibrator. The whole bed was just shaking, and they hit my business. That really hurt me. I never could recover from that. I was hit with some of the most strangest laws in the world that the book could go into. Sorry I'm not doing a great interview here.
You're doing a wonderful interview, and stop.
You know, it's been a long time.
Stop it.
You know,
stop it.
Let me, because this is what happened. We got the ball rolling. I stayed with that this Jeffrey Johnson Act. It's mostly known as the bully law. And I stayed with that for like 3.5 years in legislation. And we had Matthew and Greg and them in a private school at that time. The doctor said we had to start introducing them to the real world. It was a real dark 2-3 years, but it was really dark. It's still dark in that area, and very dark.
Yeah, that's their real world. Yeah, that's a great thing to say.
Yeah, you. I'm glad I wrote the book for therapy to bring more awareness. The statute in Florida is called 1006.147. Recently, we had that massacre down here in Broward County where we lost 17 students and some teachers. I think it was 17 lives were lost. If they would have used that bully law, what at the time was considered the toughest in the nation by some articles, I think by the Washington Post, that would have never happened. The boy who did that horrific event, it was 66 reports he asked for help. They were able to confirm he asked for help 38 times in written form for help before he did that act. A lot of people don't know that there was two more students that could not live with the horrible event of seeing that, and that's when you get back to post-traumatic stress disorder. And those two girls, I believe, I know they took their lives. So on top of 17, it was two more. So you're at 19, and that's not counting for all the children and the families who are affected from that ordeal down there.
It's traumatic.
It just multiplies, you know. Oh, let me say one. A lot of people don't know about Toast. And what made a difference on Matthew, and it would have made a big difference, and I've learned this on mental illness. After her horrific event of anything, of shooting or multiple beatings and that, rapes or something, the first 24 hours is the most important. If
yes.
you can get that person mental help in 24 hours, the chances of you getting them over that event in their mind where they don't get stuck, you can do it. But when they told me, I'm down there 8-9 days. I didn't even know how bad I was screwed yet, okay? I didn't even have even thought of what was going to happen. But just to let you know, like 8 days, I'm buried, okay? The school board or nobody had a professor come out here or tell me what I'm up against, okay? All I know is it was like turning the switch on and off. Matthew went in, then in 2.5 hours later, I'm holding him there while he's fighting for his life. And, you know, people are dummying up, you know, back then. I just wanted to say that if somebody, you know, gets in a horrific event, you know, it's just not the broken arm and the slashed leg or something. You got to think of what's going through their mind. Last time I heard, I think we lost, we lose about 5 or 7 soldiers a day or something like that. It was deal with mental illness.
And that's definitely, I've had segments on different aspects of this because this is definitely a subject close to me. It's a big thing for me. I have an issue with the fact that our kids, as young as 9 and 8 even, are dealing with mental health issues that are for older people who's been through a lifelong experience, you know, a bowl full of experience in life that they have to deal with. First of all, I need to say something to you. I know a lot of times when you talk, you say things to me, you can't blame yourself for not understanding PTSD. You know, there are professionals who are the people that you go to have it treated that are still are trying to get to the bottom and understand how it works. You know, there's no, you didn't even have the proper, no one even gave you the proper right thing to even know how to start. They kept a big portion of your son's attack away from you. They called you when there was a part two already done and in progress before you even knew that the...
Oh, yeah, no.
There you go. You didn't even have the right to know. You said that when you airlifted your son to a hospital, that his first examination by a professional was, you were told that he was in that position for hours already. You were only told...
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. That's... No, when that lady hit him with that pen source light, she looked at me and she said, she said, he's been like this for hours. I said, all I know is 10 minutes. That's all I know. And she also asked me, where did this happen at? And I said, Sebring Middle School. It's in the book. She looked at me and she said, another one? I never did pursue that. Some people ask me, would you ever... I was kind of busy.
Oh, come on. To be honest with you, I don't think any parent in that particular moment would have been thinking about that. All you're thinking about is my child going to be okay? And I do want to take this story that you're saying, because you and I both were on this mission to make sure that anti-bullying is up. First of all, I want to make sure that my listeners understand and know, because this is also although it's not you, this person was critical in the progress that you did make. Those of you who have read his book will probably know, but for those of you who didn't, just Google real quick Jeff's Law or the Jeffrey Johnston Stand Up for All Students Act. Now, this was a boy that was bullied so bad he took his own life, and his mom fought alongside you, I think you joined her in the fight to get first this act put into place, and they kind of stalled you and kept having you guys miss the law passing moment or the voting moment, and had to start all over again. The pushback, we got that. They were just being spiteful and childish at that time, but it was a type of spiteful and childish that went beyond just being called a nuisance. This was some really dangerous stuff. Your wife lost her life. You lost one of your sons, correct?
Yes, ma'am. I lost him on Angel was his name. I lost him on Gateway Street, December 24th, automotive. He died instantly. The only thing, people, is the last, after Carol, Carol got dementia at 47, 48 years old. Year and a half after getting the dementia, she was already breaking down looking back on it. But after she got the dementia, then she got the breast cancer. She didn't even know she had breast cancer. She was so far
And see,
gone.
this is what
and she
people
went
don't get.
8 years on the feeding tubes we did with Carol.
Oh,
her parents... and Carol never wanted anybody to pull a plug. That was, she told me, no, Bob, you don't pull my plug. She believed in miracles. I said she just passed in, July 5th. Then, it took me a little while to handle the boy's death. That was devastating. Yeah.
I lost one myself. I know.
Yeah. You know, you try not to, you got to come to terms with that and, you know, and move on after a child. Life is for the living. And
well,
the best I can do is live his life through me, you know.
In the event of a child's death, which a lot of people don't seem to get, even psychologists will tell you that is the one type of death that is unique and different and doesn't really go away. And I'll say this to you, you never get over it, but you move along through it. And I lost a baby. You know, my son died, you know, woke up one day and he was not breathing anymore. A thousand babies a year were dying to this thing, but I already knew before he passed that he had issues with his breathing. And people, at the time, he was too young for the test that they have to have picked it up. But, you know, your kids are supposed to outlive you. And to know that there was something that happened to him that was so beyond, you know, any explanation, and that, you know, the magic mommy and daddy boo-boo healing thing didn't work, or you couldn't be the super cape parent that, you know, everybody thinks parents are, that your kids think you are. You know, you got the magic kiss, mommies have the magic kiss, and daddies have the magic, you know, play thing, and we could pretend we're Superman. But when things like this happen, when you are fighting evils that you can't even fathom exist to a kid, to a child, to the point where they went so far. And the thing is that it wasn't even the things that they were doing. It wasn't even about the covering up anything other than who the person was. And then now after that, now it went to, oh, wait. So, oh my God. So if he continues to talk, then I'm going to have to explain why there wasn't an official there. Why wasn't the fight reported? Why wasn't this? Oh my God. Why didn't we, you know, be there, which, like you said, could have prevented the next step of stuff. And from what I'm understanding, this bully, after beating him in the bus, beat him to keep him shut about the beating on the bus, and then beat him again so that he could shut up about the other two times. And
It was known in legislation as, later on, somebody, you know, they probably didn't mean to say it in front of me.
Yeah, I got you. And then they didn't want, then they went after, they couldn't leave it alone. Like, that was bad enough. But then they had to get real deep. They couldn't just let you be hurt. You had to be broken and disabled too. So they went after your livestock, and then they went after your kids' beloved pets, to the point where they let one of those pets be found by your children hung up.
Oh yeah. No, we got one hung up on the fence.
Then your family had to watch you get dragged out over some crazy, dormant, never really used law.
It was a 1920 law. It was a 1920 law. It was called the Cow Out Law. It was 70,000 calls. This is, people helped me run that down, these numbers down. There was 70,000 calls, meaning a cow got out, because it's a rural community. One of the officers who was a resource officer, who's in the book, is Jonathan Doyle. Carmen got him finally. He said, I let a cow out. And a couple of weeks later, people, believe this or not, for letting an alleged cow out, an alleged cow, nobody, from what you said, it was out. This is no joke. They took 8 officers, and I have no priors, and they came at my house at 11:45 at night and arrested me for letting a cow out.
Oh,
it's a
you see,
it's the book. You might laugh at the time, but it was great stress.
It's not funny. None of this is funny. None of it.
It broke us financially. One was already we're not rich people by far. We were just blue-collar workers. I had my own little print shop, but I ran everything, you know, and the wife helped, and even the children did. We literally built our own house. Tara would mix the mud in the kids, and they would pass me a block, and we laid every block in this house. And but let me jump here for a minute. Just I want people to know a few things, what I learned, which you wouldn't know if you didn't go in legislation. The bully bill, it was known, was around for about approximately, and it's very precise, 32 years in the state of Florida. There was always a bully bill or anti-violence bill surrounding schools bouncing around legislation. It bounced around. And it did help a lot, Debbie Johnson being a Florida teacher, speaking out. It carried a lot of weight. A lot of teachers do see bullying. They do report it correctly. They'll report it to the guidance counselor, and then I've had teachers get persistent enough when I see it, they'll report it even higher to the vice principal and the principal. And they're told, you know, the layoffs are coming, you know, if you keep pushing. And I've run across that with a lot of teachers on that. The other thing I noticed, you know, it's a big oversight on the bill. A lot of money is allocated when a bill gets passed, a great deal of money, people. Well, the bill didn't precisely say where it was going to exactly go on the bullying bill other than school safety. We were able to track down the Florida Sheriff's Department and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement purchased $36,000 worth of hand sanitizer to fight bullying in Florida schools. So I made a comment, you know, I got dirty cops with clean hands. By the way, my website is dirtyblueline.com. I'm going to take my name off more things and go more into the retirement mode after these conversations we'll have over the next two episodes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so that was something that was an oversight if you to allocate it. The other thing what Florida did with that bully law to water it down is they wanted each county. We got 67 counties in our state of Florida. They wanted each county to adopt their only anti-bullying bill where they can modify it. And the bad thing with that is it gave them 67 different escape hatches to, you know, to finagle through the courts. I'm willing to bet I can bully you the same way in Florida what I do in New York. Why shouldn't it be the same law?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because this whole episode series that we're doing is so that we can make sure, you know, that everybody's aware of the holes in the laws and the fact that if all of these laws are open and all of these things came to play and all of these acts and laws have been actually, the acts have actually been adopted into law, and now every state across America has a mandatory obligation to adopt an anti-bullying law, why are there still so many higher incidents of bullying happening? Now, let me tell you something that I just found that kind of threw me off. Now, the American Psychological Association wrote an article, and I believe, like I said, they named it February 2016 is the date of this article. It was written by Dewey G. Cornell, a PhD, and Susan P. Limber, PhD. I'm going to tell you something that got me, which shows me, and I believe definitely you can probably agree and attest, that this is a reason why it's like no matter how hard or how bad something is, everybody knows what has to happen, but yet nobody just does that thing to make it go away. There's always some escape hatch, like you said, or some fine line that they tried to draw or whatever. Now, here's the deal. They have this thing, and they called it, do U.S. laws go far enough to prevent bullying at school? Now, something that disturbed me was they say define bullying, but then they said, after defining bullying, you have to figure out, does this qualify as, quote, harassment or bullying? Now, when I looked at what they have as a quote of harassment, it's some of it goes into the bullying category or could be served as both. However, why should that be the question? Why should any of those things be allowed to have any guideline to go under? Once even harassment, isn't harassment like the gateway? It's sort of like people say, if you do marijuana, it could lead to other drugs. If you're doing cocaine, then you could graduate to pills. If you're doing beer, you can graduate to hard liquor, things to that effect. So isn't harassment the same type of thing as a gateway to the bullying? And then the bullying encompasses so much. There's verbal bullying, there's cyber bullying, there's physical bullying, there's mental bullying, there's shaming someone until they kill themselves. There's so many things. Then you have a society right now that takes away we grew up with, some of the cushions, like I say all the time, we grew up with, where when there wasn't your parents to see you, there was a nosy neighbor, or there was a caring teacher, or there was a guidance counselor. Today, guidance counselors are not guiding. Today, they are trying to assess a child for some sort of mental health problem that they can attach one of these psychotropic drugs to. Leads to these kids having intense and adverse reactions, which also could lead to, like this little boy here, rage problems, enhanced strengths, anger problems.
Clem busted a girl's nose when he was in second grade. After a while, you start asking other parents about Clem, and they all, you didn't know about Clem? Clem had a long history of being violent. I didn't know it. If I knew it, I would have changed different ways of thinking. But here's something that would happen, and I was able to verify the whole story, so I don't mind talking about it, is this shows you that the resource officers in Florida need training in mental counseling, which could be a big door what I just opened, but this is what happened at Sebring High School. The boy was being bullied, and he had an odd look, I was told, but he was being picked on for it. And he asked for help numerous times, and his parents did. And he finally had enough of it, so he took a large knife to school in a book bag. It never made it out of the book bag. Somebody told the resource officer, and they just grabbed the bag from him. They took the boy up to the front office and did that like a drill sergeant, yelling and screaming at him and telling him he's messing up his life. And this is a young child who had already been bullied for an extensive time, like 2 years. So he was fragile mentally. When the officer got done, the boy went home and took a .22 rifle and put it to his head and he killed himself that day.
Okay,
I started pushing for answers on that one. The grandparents were raising that boy. They left town. I started pushing. That boy was in high school. One of the ladies whose son worked out here, her ex-husband was a bailiff. And she tipped me off on this. And I said, what? Yeah, it's in the courts right now. And then I started looking into it. And their grandparents, they were raising they were older people, and sheriff organization put a little muscle on them, I understand, and they just left town.
And you see, this is where what we were speaking on, where bullying is becoming an epidemic, like the pandemic. It's a disease.
It's 1 in 4 have mental issues. I have somebody who, I used to keep track of those numbers better, but they got mental issues, and then you look how that person is going to be dependent on counseling the rest of their life if they get post-traumatic stress disorder or bullying, and they're going to be non-productive in life, a lot of them. One thing I was told, we did cost me half my wealth, and I don't have much. The counselors told me, Matthew, if I didn't put him through all that counseling, he had a chance to be like an alcoholic, and what's common, okay, drug dependency and that. Matthew never went down that road. He probably experimented without me knowing about it, but he doesn't drink. And so that's what one thing the counseling said would help. To go back to that money thing, we did also learn the sheriff's organization used, and the Florida Department of Education is involved in that. They took the school safety money and, did concrete around schools because they said the cracks in the, it was called school safety money, so they started allegating it for cracks in the sidewalk.
So they were getting technical with it.
Yeah, they was an oversight of the people which did the bill. I mean, me and Mrs. Johnson went in there and we told them in detail what happened to our children, and you only get 3 minutes in legislation before they kick you off the podium. And Charlie Crist did sign it. I was disappointed in Charlie Crist on some things, but Charlie teach you too, you know. So there was some hard lessons Charlie taught the Bean family. But it was sad to find out the bill was around 32 years.
What happened to your family? I mean, it's unthinkable. It's unfathomable. And the thing is that through all of that fluff and bluff and cover ups, the problem is still there. The damage has been done. The damage is still being done. And you know what gets me is that at the sacrifice of your family. And, okay, so you guys sort of got away with some things. Then at least on the down low, do something about it so that it doesn't happen again where you have to cover something else up or you have to go through all this. My thing is, like you said, everything in that book won't be able to be discussed in one, segment. But we you and I are speaking that this is your last three critical interviews about a very big problem, and you went through all that fighting and you sacrificed so much and you lost so much, and poor Ms. Johnson just wants to move on with her life, but she lost her boy because
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I mean, I stayed on the button too much. I told people before I was hell bent and heaven bound. Carol gave me an order to find out, because at the end of every day, we had episodes we always had episodes for years and years with Matthew, and it just beats you down. You're on your own when this happens to your children. You don't realize that you put the child on the school bus or in a school at your own risk. Okay? It's the only responsibility Florida school has is to give your child a piece of paper, a pencil, means to write, and a book to read. They don't have to guarantee anything to do with safety. You'll see a gun. 1 in 20 children will see a gun before they graduate from a Florida school. We showed statistics on that. Go back to this, recent on that massacre we had down there. They did make another law, and people were getting all happy media-wise and jumping up and down, anti-bullying law. And I'm looking at it, and I'm sure the people who worked with us looking at it. We already did that back in 2008, and they're all saying now Florida's got an anti-bullying law. All they did, people, was lay a law over the law.
And still massacres are happening. So it's that's the thing. When does some legislation start looking? Why does it always have to be some major media storm of tragedy before somebody says this repair needs to be truly repaired, not patched up? Your family lost out. You spoke of things that you're still dealing with today. Did you not tell me you can't hear a phone ring because of what happened?
No, that's true. I don't know.
You can't deal with a phone ring.
I have severe post-traumatic stress disorder. Yeah.
Thank you.
I gathered. Yeah. Yeah, it's no fun. That phone rings. Yeah, I don't know. I don't leave my phone on, people. Everything's done by schedules. And it had to do with that episode in greater detail, what happened to Matthew. It's just that ringtone just would make me crumble. Because when Matthew got post, Carol got post, Greg got post, I got post. And we even had some, you'll see in the book, some of the good old boys in this area they're known as. And it is a white supremacy group in this area called the good old boys. I infiltrated them. I've been actually at a meeting and they didn't know who I was. I was invited to do that, to infiltrate. But one of them was a guy who flies airplanes, and they would buzz the house once in a while, very like 30 feet above. You know, it sounds like it's kind of funny, wow, I see an airplane. But when you have a child with post-traumatic stress disorder and you got the whole house calm and a sizable, very sizable airplane flies over your house 30, 40 feet above, buzzing the house, it would set off its post in mine. I mean, the whole place fell apart. The book would go more into it. He was a prominent doctor, Dr. Owens, old name around here. We were able, in the book, when you'll see the electric company was harassing us, some people say, how'd they get into that? The book would go more into it. You'll find out that Sheriff Susan Benton's dad was the president of the Glaze Electric at one time. We were able to connect that.
I kind of need
Clem
you to clarify.
Clem only got 5 days. Yeah, and Clem only got 5 days suspension on that, by the way.
And that didn't help your son's and family's PTSD. But listeners, so that you could understand the significance of that airplane, one of the retaliation measures that took place against the Bean family was they started to create a runway over his property with no permit. And they would that caused a lot of water retention, right? Like standing water accumulation and almost a foot of water around your property where you guys had to.
That's what happened. Yeah, they the book would go a little more where people could follow it a little better. But what happened is, too, is we were attacked for those first 24 months, but, you know, you end up getting targeted as a disturber of the community, you know, and asking questions, you know, why my son's like this, and I'm working in legislation. You made me stutter. At one time, we had three newspapers, Lake Placid Journal, Highlands New Sun, and Highlands. I went to every one of those newspapers during legislation. I asked them to run ads for the anti-bullying bill, and I would pay. I would pay the money for the ads. And every newspaper in this town turned me down. They would not let me run any ads to try to get the community behind the anti-bullying bill in Tallahassee. And then even the radio shows. But we got ostracized, and, you know, maybe I should, this is probably the right, wrong word to say, but you get labeled because you're kicking the pot, you know, stirring the pot. But I'm over here trying to find out what's going on with the education.
Child.
So when I questioned the neighbor of putting in an illegal runway and the water came over and blew out my road, what I already built, that the hardships that put on, and we were already broke. We already went broke from Matthew's thing. We're just making it month to month on the business, because you're trying to run a business at the same time you're taking the child all over the state to specialist for his eyes. It took 3 or 4 years for Matthew to get his eyesight back. So we were going around doing eyes in the mental part. But the neighbor went ahead and blew out my road and left me the mess. Water management, you'll see, came out and made him fix the runway. But we got stuck with the mess, and the book will go more into it. But you become a target, okay? And even to the day, I'm still a target.
Something.
Yeah, you're in the community. Seabreen don't want to be known as a bullying area. Remember that other, did you ever look at the Carolyn Strong interview?
I didn't see all of that.
There's a part in there where a lady explains to me.
Carolyn Strong from Bully Stink?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did
she
watch
it. She did an interview,
this.
Too.
I'm sorry, a little bit of a delay here with the transmission, okay. So I apologize.
Okay, you there? Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
There was a part in that interview where a lady who was born and raised in Sebring told me, she said, you know, this incident, what happened at Sebring Middle School, was like a bad spot on a white sheet. And the lady explained to me in these words, Bobby, we're going to scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub and bleach and bleach and scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub and bleach and bleach and dip. And she said, eventually, that bullying incident never happened here.
And that's exactly what your story is and why the problem with it lasts today. And that's actually something that I really want to bring in. We have like 38 minutes left in the show, and I want us... Your story, you know, I didn't bring you out here to readdress your, you know, your traumas and this horrible story just so that you could feel, you know, this hurt all over again, Bobby. I want to help keep your fight alive without you having to keep reliving seeing your son be battered to almost to death.
Yeah.
You know, thinking, so I want that anything that you have to revisit, it goes into what you and Deborah Johnston and myself and people like us and parents everywhere are trying to keep straight. Just hang on one second, because apparently I have a person that wants to either comment or ask a question. So hang on a minute, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good evening. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Good evening. Hi, Katie. This is Tylon, you Savior Washington. I'm really just enjoying the program.
Oh, wow. Hi, Tylon.
Hi, this is a very important topic. I invited Sonny B. Sutherland from the I Ain't Having It show, our brother Diverse. We were on another program, and I told him about this program that was talking about this very important issue. And so I just wanted to kind of listen in and chime in when I could. But I love the conversation. It's so important.
Thank you, my love. And this is Tylon from the GoPro radio show, which Bobby, he's one of those people that is active in fighting as well. I don't know how long you've been listening, Tylon, but this man's story is over the top of, you know, his son at 14 was bullied almost to death. And so much cover up just from him and his wife trying to find out what happened. You and I, Mr. Washington, we have been... It's, you know, collaborating with these topics and trying to get our community better, both as parents, both as activists ourselves with platforms. And I want to, you know, Bobby, for you to understand, you are safe with us. Like your story is safe with us. You have no apologies to make about anything you feel you can't say properly. There is no format in that respect. What happened to you should not have happened. And let me say this. As I brought up that APA, the American Psychological Association article, this is one of the reasons why, and with all these new laws and these awareness and, you know, tell a friend and, you know, be whatever, they are still people who are trying to leave a little bit of a loophole open so that nobody really has to cross that line and actually pick up the torch of responsibility to make those accountable, especially if there is an athletic person involved, if there's a money maker for the organization or the district involved. If there's, and that's the thing, though. That's what you and I got together.
It goes all the way to college. Colleges do the same thing.
Oh, we know.
Colleges all the way up. I learned, I'm just a common man, but I learned a lot being knocked around. I mean,
I could
talk for hours and years on it, but outcome
there
of it is.
There is nothing common about you, nothing. So don't put that on yourself. Nothing common about you. Tylon, this man, when I'm out of words, listen.
Yeah, I see that.
this man, your crusade, the fact that you and Debbie Johnston was able to even set the template for at least every state must adopt an anti-bullying law, that was the most critical start ever. Because now we have at least something we could say, we could look at and go, okay, so you covered this. But guess what? There's still a big crack in that. Because you know what? Even with this coverage, my son is still getting bullied and you still not following things that's supposed to happen.
No, they rarely, it's right. rarely enforced. I used to put my ear a little more to the community. And I have no problem within a few hours to find parents in this community who has multiple asked for help. And the school board just shuns them off. And it's common. And like I said, if a teacher speaks up too strong, you know, she will be reminded that layoffs happen or people get transferred. That was a very common thing when I talked to the teachers. The law enforcement told me they know who the bully is. They can go to any school and tell you who the bully is, and we're just going to keep an eye on them. But if the bully does excel in athletics or even academics, maybe they look the other way.
What that boy did to your son should have been classified as attempted murder.
I agree, and more people would listen to other interviews than that came up. It did come up in legislation from actually the one who, when he heard it in great detail with a lawyer who never really knew me, but he did help now and then with some good questions he taught me. And he questioned me on it, and he looked at that. Yeah, that's how he classified it. That should have been an attempted murder. Judge David Langford, who's the Chief Justice here, and please remember that name, Judge David Langford, he would not let me and Carol in the courtroom the day Clem got sentenced. And then, you know, you're allowed to put your two cents in. They
right.
said they accidentally sent all the paperwork over to the middle school. And we never got to show up. But the people who live in this community, who are educated to the community and educated people, they all point to Chief David Langford, District 10, Chief of Courts, the one who put the leverage on the Bean family. This came, he's a Freemason out of Lake Placid. So is Glaze Electric, Susan Benton's dad, Glaze Electric, Judge Rittenhauer's family was the nurse that day. Judge Rittenhauer is a Mason. Today, Sheriff Paul Blackman, who's in my book, he was a captain at the time. We went to him for help for the harassment on my family in front of me and Carol. He's a tall fellow, and he put his head down and said, Bobby, I have a mortgage payment too. It's in the book. He was a captain. Today, he's the sheriff. We ended up finding it to come out of that Lake Placid Lodge. There's more people who were involved in the case. We found out later on where came out of there.
And I'm at.
I've been
point.
Around here now a long. The only reason I stayed, people, it was just economic. And I have the American dream. I was trying to build it.
Well,
okay, that's why I call it the Broken Patriot. You know, I used to be more stars and stripes, but not no more. You know. I just kind of got burned out of that one. Yeah, anybody got any questions out there? I can help you. I mean, you can throw something on.
Ty, do you have any for him?
Yeah, you know. Actually, I have a statement and a question, a comment, and a concern. I'll start with the comment. I have a gentleman by the name of Sonny B. Sutherland, who has a show called I Ain't Having It. It comes on every Thursday. And he also is the president and founder of the People's Advocacy Group. And he works with a lot of folks who have been bullied in one form or another. He works with the courts, works in family courts and all that. And I just feel like it would be an excellent show for you to spread the word about, you know, your book the tragedy that happened. One of the questions that I have in a much larger context of sort of like what we see go on in the world in terms of bullying, when we see, you know, nations, larger nations fighting, you know, I wouldn't even say another nation, other groups of people, or you see what's happening in Ukraine, for example, in Russia. And I think that what could we do, and now I'm leading to the question, what could we do as citizens to stem this idea of people who perhaps are bigger not taking care of each other and looking out for each other and nurturing each other and protecting each other to this idea of being bigger and taking advantage of each other?
Boy, that's a good one there too. Yeah, that was a long one. It comes back in schools, at least. We're not talking about corporate bullying right now or world bullying, but school bullying comes back to family values. If a child is raised in a stable environment and taught ethics and morals, some people believe in you know, from the religious point of view, through the Bible or just good upbringing, and the parents are stable, you're going to find you're going to get a stable child. If the household is chaotic and crazy, you're going to end up with a crazy child. I can tell you, we've learned that. Humanity is rarely practiced, right, sir?
Yeah, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, we lend these sort of micro challenges when it happens to, say, contextually to us and our family, and then we kind of live in a much larger universe when we expand our lens to the community, to the school's community. Like that's what happened, you know, with you when you look at what happened in that school environment. And then you pull out even more when you look at the school lives in a city, or, you know, and then inside of a state and inside of a nation. And when people see how people just generally treat each other, help but to, I believe, leak into these other spaces. And that's why we need to have these conversations. And I think that's why your book is so important, because it has us saying, okay, you know, what went wrong here? How do we take accountability?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I had a choice or word for I have never said on the radio yet.
Go ahead.
Where was everybody? Yeah, don't shock your listeners. I'll bet on that. You know, corporate bullying is a big thing too. But we'll go into.
I'm sorry, Bobby. I just wanted to tie on for a minute on that. Tylan, you and I have spoken about this before, and Bobby, you and I spoke about it in our pre-stuff. All of this stuff that happened to your family, all of it, stemmed from them trying to cover up Clem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay?
No doubt.
And Clem represents for them corporate stuff. And it's sad, because that is the thing that I've touched on before that we see happening quite often, because many crimes go unpunished or reprimanded or whitewashed or put under there, depending on who the offender is. Depending on who the offender is, certain reprimands or punishments that would come down a certain way gets a little loophole for this particular person who's a VIP for some reason. This little boy that hurt your son was, I don't know what his upbringing was or what he bullied before or what his home bringing is, but based on what we read about the way that they were able to get out of paying your family restitution, obviously that family didn't teach their son any accountability whatsoever for his actions, because he was given local celebrityhood in other things. The fact that he could sit there and bully your son into shutting him up about being beaten once, while beating him again, while beating him a third time, into telling him to this point, how could that have happened if this boy already wasn't skating through things because of who he is there?
Now, keep that this in mind. This came from Michael Durham. The gentleman was Michael Durham. He was the Highlands County Sheriff's lawyer, and he was really trying to protect the sheriff's organization because they leaned on me, people. I've had officers lean on me more than once, okay, and warn me in private, and Michael did too. But Michael Durham also, there was talk that there was a fourth fight. There was one on
the
bus. They're talking one. Well, Michael Durham said there was one on the bus. We verified. He believes there was another one. The bus pulls into the high school before it goes to the middle school. He said there was another assault there. Then there was the one in the locker room. Then he walked into the clinic beating them, the one who did the most damage. We never could verify the one at the high school, but the person who called in about the cow out, it ended up being the same resource officer that day at the high school. Mike,
Bobby,
that was Jonathan Doyle.
If you were to find out that there was a fourth attack, how would that would make nothing better for you or for your son. What happened on the bus the first time was already enough of a precedent for the damage. His head was being knocked around like a bowling ball,
yeah,
like you said. But this is going back to everything that we've been speaking on. Do you really believe that if this had been some average Joe student that attacked your son on the bus, that he would have been this covered up?
You know,
do you really think you would have had all this other stuff, all this residual stuff happening afterwards? And this is the thing, regardless to who the person is, bullying is an issue that is, it costs more than just some kid getting a couple of black eyes or whatever. Look at what happened with your son and your family. Look at what happened.
No, they were brutal. They were brutal.
Exactly.
I mean,
and that's the thing. What you're saying, what we're doing here is to make sure this doesn't go untouched. Your family, Debbie lost her son. How many young children are hanging themselves? And that's the other thing. We also spoke about the other problem. You spoke about guidance counselors, and so did you at some point, I think, Ty. Nobody is getting counseling in the school as counseling is supposed to be met, be done. Now it's not about how do you feel. Let's see what we could do about that. What do you think? No, this is just a phase. It doesn't seem that way now, but you're going to get older, honey. And when you look back at this, it's going to be a dusty memory. Now, when kids are going to a guidance counselor, they're not being asked how they feel and being, not groomed, but encouraged to find what their inner strength is or what's good about them or what their positivities are. Now, all these officials are doing is sitting up there. Tell me what you're feeling. Is it a sadness? Is it a happiness? Do you feel like you go up and down? Because what they're trying to do now is not say you're going through a growing pain and this is how you deal with that one. Now they're saying what you're doing is you're going through some sort of psychosis that we have to label. And then after we label the psychosis, let's go pick out of the little blue jar which psychotropic drug we're going to give you at your young age.
No, they a lot of parents complain about the over-medication on other things.
Well, that's what's causing these little kids to go further and actually, come on, as long as you've known society, when has a 9-year-old or an 8-year-old even understood using suicide as a method of conflict resolution?
No, that's a tough word, that suicide word around here. I mean, it wasn't funny. We had episodes with them like that, and they were ugly. It tears up a family. I've always felt that the community should have pulled better together, especially from the Champion of Children Foundation. I did learn, because I started digging into the nonprofits and that, and, you know, basically a nonprofit, about 13% of the money will get to the cause. The other 85-87% goes to management. I did learn things like that on the Champion of Children. What was very saddening, you know, this town is ruled by a certain amount of family. around here, and it's going to stay that way for a long time in Sebring. It's not going to change anytime soon. I might change my mind, but they're not. But, you know, please let the people know that, you know, if you go to the dirtyblueline.com, one word, and you can get a copy of the book. We're going to do an update probably by once I get a few more dollars in my hand. I'm going to do an update. Then I'm just going to let that website and walk away from this. A lot had to do with Angel's death, too, in Maryland. You know, I lost my dad during that, too, time.
You lost a lot, Bobby.
Yeah, I lost too much, they said, too fast. And the cancer slowed me up, you know. The cancer slowed me up.
Well, you gained some friends.
You did.
No, I appreciate
it, Bobby. And they,
you know, I can...
We don't go nowhere. We don't go anywhere. We stay.
No, I was approached about writing a book on corporate bullying because I've been through that during this episode. I might attempt, I don't know, but I might attempt to write that when I finally retire 100%. They had to do, you know, we all been through, no people go through the cancer thing, so you got to go through all those treatments. But they told me I'm going to live.
Yeah, Ty, I'm here.
Hey, Kay, I just want to say something to your guest. I mean, I'm feeling his story. So I don't know if Katie tells you, I have a film called They Belong to All of Us. I was grateful that I was submitted into the Cannes Film Festival, but I won two awards for Best Short 2D Film and Best Film with Social Purpose at the Cannes Film, and I'm always looking for new topics. Please forward this gentleman my number. I'd like to talk a little bit more. I think we have to get the word out, and there's nothing like putting together visuals to this story so that we can really compel people to get more involved.
No, I appreciate that, sir, because my goal when I started this, and I'll say it was selfish in the beginning, is when Matthew got hurt, I had three more children. I wanted to know, you know, what's going on in a public school, okay? Because I had to put the other three in school. And after I got going in legislation, I didn't realize I was going to have such a big impact and I could help more children. And if anything, I became louder.
Beautiful. Yeah,
you know, I wanted to protect my grandchild now. I'm a grandfather of one. I can't do nothing about my losses. And I try to stay positive, but you know, you got to move on. And I'd like to talk to you, sir, when we can. And there is that Carolyn Strong interview and somebody else, Katie, but that's how I remember your name. Another K, I think it's Bonnie K. Her book.
There's only one me, Bobby.
Book. Yeah.
There's only one me, Bobby.
Okay. But her book club has 500 book authors, and they gave me the Book of Excellence Award.
Well, you hey,
out of 500
listen,
books.
Listen,
wow,
you are of excellence to me forever. Like I said, the honor tonight is mine, and I want there's just a few minutes left. And Tylon, your wonderful return. You know you know you're always my boost over here. Parents, this is important because Bobby will be here the next two Mondays to continue off this story until, you know, he decides to do whatever's next. But let me say this. We're starting this anti-bullying campaign and this awareness, but try to understand something. Before we could deal with blockages by, I say, corrupt or afraid officials, we have to understand that a big part of bullying being stopped starts with us as parents. And it starts first in our homes. And then for us to have the guts to stand up and be, you know, talk to our children's friends and then our neighbors and see what we can do in our own right to stop it. Listen, I'm a community mom. What I mean is the same type of, hey, don't do that I say to my children, I will say to somebody else's kid. I will do that in the store. That's not right. You don't have to do that. What's going on with you? You okay? What's, you know, that's something I would do. because it's just like a knee-jerk thing for me. But I grew up, we grew up in that nosy neighborhood of a village because that's the way that it was, and our communities were better for it. Right now, in this day and age where the government is giving open access to these kids to things that, you know, parents were supposed to slowly transition them into, we are dealing with a community village that doesn't exist anymore. We have to reform that. Parents got to understand that if your children is exhibiting signs of being aggressive, of being, and there are some parents that got to understand, some of them have sociopathic children, and you will know that by the type of things at a young age that entertains them. And I'll say this straight out, because I don't want your child coming to poison the community when you could have done something about it while you're pretending that they're your little angel. But if they love to skin cats at the age of six, we got issues. Okay?
We got issues.
That's not a normal, joyful thing for a kid to think. It's fun. If they're burning people's children's faces for fun at 11 years old, we got to start watching some things here. If your child is figuring that they could beat the hell out of another kid to keep them quiet because they clearly know that their actions are wrong and punishable, then clearly your child is not silly enough to not know that they are doing something wrong. And it is your job to correct it before the rest of the world has to deal with it. This boy could have been killed. And right now, you know, this family lost more in post-traumatic stress disorder and broken hearts than they did to the actual incident themselves because of that incident, because of a community that abandoned them, because everybody who was involved to make a damn difference was intertwined with somebody who started the stuff. Fear factors everywhere. So with that being said, take care of your child at home and make sure that if the rest of the world's screwing up, they better understand with the fear of God in their eyes that they can't be the ones to do it. Maybe that'll help. Maybe you could stop teaching your kids how to shoot a damn gun at 4 years old. What happened to you, Bobby, is unfathomable. What happened to you?
No, like I said, I invite everybody to read the book and spread the word.
Right, because everything you heard here still doesn't brace the surface of what took place to this man.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't even come close to what the family did for all those long time. Like I said, I look back on it, it's like walking into a graveyard, you know. Family's name on a tombstone.
I can't even get past chapter 2 without crying, even though I made it to the beginning of chapter 6. But to go back and to reread, and I'm breaking down because I have children. I have grandchildren. I have a little boy that was nonverbal, you know, a grandson who's autistic, who was nonverbal, who even now, although he's a lot more communicative and two-way communicative, he still can't say straight up, you know, this person hit me, this person hurt me, this person, we are teaching him, but you know something, he can't right now at the age he should be because he's autistic. That is a vulnerable victim in progress that needs protection. These laws.
No, they target. Your bully, you know, once you start studying this, because we got into it more on the psychological, and the bully knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
They target the weak, you know.
But
they like
then,
to be victorious.
Then society wants you to look past the horrible issues that happened because of what that child did to understand, well, they're a child too and they were being bullied once too. That's not my issue at this point. And when my kid is hurt by your child, that is for you to figure out. And then after my child is there, then my choice to decide to forgive or not. And that's not, listen, I'm all for kumbaya, but at some point, if the problem has been presenting itself repeatedly and you have been trying to whitewash it repeatedly, then you clearly know there's an issue too. And the whitewashing can only happen for so long before the bloodstains come through. And enough already of our kids dying at 14. Enough already of little babies at freaking 9 years old wanting to hang themselves because somebody told them they're fat, they're gay, they're ugly, they're ugly, they're black, they're white, they're fat, they're pimply, they're stupid. They stink. They're poor. They're not popular. Nobody wants to deal with them. Go home to your hillbilly mom. Go do this with your nigger dad. Enough of this. Enough.
Words.
Enough. I get a little passionate every now and then.
Yeah, I've noticed it.
I'm a mother of many. I'm a mother of many. Biologically, the mother of many. Biologically, the mother of many grandchildren. And guess what? I'm also a community mother because I don't let any kid be left behind. None. Not at all. I do my due diligence in trying to keep a community good. I need everybody's help that got children out there. We can't do this by ourselves, Bobby. We can't do it by ourselves, Tylon.
Yeah, we can. It's a community problem. You show me a school that's violent, and I'll show you a violent community.
Listen,
it starts there. It just grows. It goes from elementary.
True.
Then it pours over to the community. Then those people would grew up in those schools. I learned a lot, more than I could probably, like I said, talk in some time on the pecking order. But the damage psychologically is what destroyed the family. Any doctor would listen to the story and followed us for years said if Matthew did not have to take that walk, well, what was documented the length of a football field on the backside of the gym the long way getting beat.
I have a question about that particular part, Bobby. Not of you, but if you've ever gotten to the bottom. How in God's earth was a child allowed to take another child with an issue to the nurse's office on their own, to the fact where he was able to take that child through a back way? How did that happen?
Well, this is what we learned is the one of the child's last name was, I think it was, his real name was Kyle Weed. And Matthew, after getting hit in the locker room, but it really wasn't, the initial damage started on the bus and his brain started swelling from the beginning. Because Matthew was said that he was slurred speech and he was complaining about he couldn't see. And that's when Clem beat him again after Matthew said he couldn't see and he couldn't talk well. Well, one of the kids said, Matthew looks like he's almost in a coma. And there was no teacher present. Instead of walking through the coach's locker room, the private locker room, over to the clinic, what my understanding was 10 yards away, 30 feet, Clem took him around the backside of the gym the long way and beat on him. There was no supervision. Randall or a rally teacher made a statement that he was somewhere in the locker room, but he doesn't remember where. Sebring Middle School is a very small school, so the locker room can't be very big, but he doesn't remember where he went. The tapes on the bus, they had them, they didn't have them, they had them, they didn't have them, then poof, they're gone. And
that's
very common. And I blame the Florida Sheriff's Department for that. I've worked
within
with more
your
of them.
Right.
You know,
unfortunately, I'm running down the show.
Now it's time to say goodnight. Nice meeting everybody, and thank you for the support.
Thank you, Bobby, for all that you're doing, and thank you for honoring my panel. I honestly and, truly from the bottom of my heart. And to Nathan Huckabee, I hope you're out there listening because you brought me to this man. Thank you. I definitely look forward to seeing you next week or hearing from you next week. But Bobby, I do understand you're going through your own health issues as well. So if it gets to the point where, you know, you physically it's a little hard for you to be here on the panel, we will continue honoring you, your mission, your story here on this discussion. But thank you again. And there are people out there that are touched right now because I've got a few message board to my phone, actually, with everybody commenting and people sending me emojis with long tears coming out and people, you know, commending you for your strength. Thank you for caring enough beyond your own pain to help other people prevent this from happening. I pray everything goes well with you from here on and that whatever comes up, you get. So to the rest of you out there, we are down to our last few minutes of the show. Bullying is a pandemic. And we are part of the solution and the antidote. We parents have a big responsibility before our kids go out there to see, be seen, to speak and address, and that's about it. Fear can't be a factor. This man was not afraid to stand up through his fear. We don't get to do that. We don't get to let his story and his child's story and his family's story go unhonored or dishonored. So thank you, Tylon. Thank you to those that were listening. Thank you, Bobby, absolutely, and to everybody else that's been hanging out with me tonight. Thank you all. I will see you here Wednesday at 10 p.m. for our next topic. Until then, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference, stop a bully, and I'll see you here Wednesday night at 10. Thank you and good night. God bless you.
Thank you for having me.
On the Edge, real talk about real. On the Edge, real talk about real issues.